Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link last edition of the year. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
It's been a pleasure having you all on board. And to wind up the year, here is what we've lined up for you.
Liberia's incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai concedes defeat and congratulates George Weah on winning Tuesday's election.
We know that our supporters in and out of Liberia are disappointed by the result of the elections. Let me, however, be sold by the fact that we did collectively fight a good fight.
And South Africa's top court rules that Parliament did not hold President Jacob Zuma accountable over his use of state funds to upgrade his private Nkandla home.
The court is saying to Parliament, you should have done this already, you haven't, now you have to do it. And I think that also then calls into question the fitness of the Speaker to continue to hold office.
And we'll get to hear the plight of Rwanda nationals in Uganda. Before we get there, here's a chance to hear other news that have been shaping the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Liberia's presidential candidate Joseph Boakai has accepted defeat, congratulating his challenger, former international footballer George Weah, for winning the country's presidential election.
I, Joseph Nyuma Boakai, a man of peace, humility, and a Liberian patriot with deep faith in God, hereby accept the results of the elections. What I was seeking was not power or title, but instead an opportunity to serve.
Boakai addressed supporters and media before the National Elections Commission's final announcement, expected later. With 98% of the ballots counted, the National Elections Commission said that Weah had won 61.5% of the vote, while Boakai received 38.5%. Despite a low turnout, the presidential runoff vote marked the first democratic transition of power in Liberia in many decades. Weah will succeed Ellen Johnson Sirleaf as Liberia's president next month. At least 12 people have been killed in Egypt as two gunmen launched a deadly attack on Coptic church in the Helwan area of the outskirts of Cairo. The victims include two police officers who tried to stop the attackers. Egypt has witnessed a massive spike in attacks targeting the country's Coptic Christian community and its places of worship over the past year, with more than 100 Christians being killed in 2017 alone. No group has claimed responsibility for the latest attack, but the Islamic State militant group's Egyptian network has targeted Christians in the country before. You're listening to DW News. South Africa's Constitutional Court has dealt another major blow at President Jacob Zuma. The top court found that lawmakers in Parliament have to trigger a legal process that could possibly see Zuma ousted from office. The court said that Parliament had failed to hold Zuma accountable following revelations that he had used the equivalent of $15 million in public funds to upgrade his private homestead in Nkandla, a village in the eastern KwaZulu-Natal province. The 75-year-old president, however, would only face impeachment should the measure be approved by a two-third majority in Parliament. He has survived another eight previous attempts to unseat him. The beleaguered president faces a total of nearly 800 charges of corruption and fraud dating back to well before his presidency, which began in 2009. As the year 2017 comes to an end, Germany remains without a formal government, more than 3 months after elections. With talks on forming a new grand coalition with the Social Democrats, or SPD, due to begin in January, a new government is not expected to take shape for another 3 months if the talks succeed. Should they fail, much like Chancellor Angela Merkel's coalition talks did last month with the business-friendly Free Democrats and the Green Party, she may be forced to lead a minority government. A difficult position as pressure is growing on Merkel, with a new YouGov poll revealing that nearly half of all Germans would now prefer her not to complete a fourth term. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com or visit our mobile app. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
You're You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Eunice Njuro.
And I'm Jane Ayeka-Kumet. Now, we start off in Liberia, where the Electoral Commission is yet to announce the final results of the Tuesday election rerun. But it's clear the country has a new president, George Weah, after provisional results announced yesterday gave him a very strong lead.
And consequently, his opponent, outgoing Vice President Joseph Boakai, has conceded defeat and congratulated the football star. Boakai also pledged support to the new president as he faces many challenges that await him, including rebuilding the country's economy. From Monrovia, here is Evelyn Kpade with more.
Boakai's acceptance of defeat comes ahead of the announcement of the final result by the National Elections Commission. He called Weah and congratulated him upon his victory.
We all are passengers on this big ship called Liberia. We know that our supporters in and out of Liberia are disappointed by the results of the elections. Let me, however, be sold by the fact that we did collectively fight a good fight.
The Elections Commission provisional results announced puts Weah in the lead with 61.5%, while Vice President Joseph Boakai had 38.5%. Upon the announcement, Weah's supporters, predominantly young people, flooded the streets in jubilation.
I feel proud for the woman.
Even though, yes, I have voted for Josh. I carry Joseph Lima Boakai. But because Josh win, I know Josh is my president. So I have to be happy and celebrate along with him.
Now, no more unity party again. We won't change the government. We won't see this government.
I voted for Joseph Boakai. I cannot criticize no one because I don't know how the other government will be tomorrow.
Evelyn Paddy compiled that report, and congratulations to the new president elect. Now, Eunice, did you actually know what his name stands for, Weah?
Jane, I must say I didn't know, but one of our listeners or followers here on Facebook has defined clearly to us what Weah stands for. He says W stands for world's best, E, European best.
And he goes ahead to say A stands for Africa's best and H stands for head of state.
So it means like he's the world's best, European best, Africa's best head of state, according to him.
And as Song Pascal says, that's a good politician.
Also, Chadi Captain says, my beloved Liberia has chosen a new leader. We pray for the best and look forward to a bright future for Liberia and its people.
Interesting story. Keep your comments coming and we'll read them as and when we can. But first, let's go to South Africa. Now, if South Africa's president, Jacob Zuma, thought he would finally have peace of mind as the year finishes, he was wrong. The man who has had a rough year still has a lot more to battle. The Constitutional Court has again ruled that Parliament failed to hold him accountable in the Nkandla scandal, in which millions of dollars were spent to upgrade his private home.
The Nkandla scandal is one of a series of presidential disgraces that have tarnished the reputation of the ruling African National Congress. Here is Tuzo Kumalu with details on that.
Justice Chris Jephthah's judgment was supported by the majority of justices of the Constitutional Court. In the Nkandla judgment, the court found that Zuma had violated the Constitution by not implementing the recommendations of the public protector, but according to Justice Jephthah, Parliament failed to properly apply Section 89 of the Constitution and ordered it to formulate rules that will guide it in future occurrences.
The failure by the National Assembly to make rules regulating removal of a president in terms of Section 89 sub 1 of the Constitution constitutes a violation of this section and is it valid?
Section 89 of the Constitution states that Parliament may remove the president from office for serious violation of the law, serious misconduct, or inability to perform the functions of his office. And legal expert Lawson Naidu says the judgment is an egg on the face for Parliament.
The court is saying to Parliament, you should have done this already, you haven't, now you have to do it. And I think that also then calls into question the fitness of the Speaker to continue to hold office.
An Economic Freedom Fighters Party's Godrich Gadi says they expect Parliament to convene soon to make the rules as ordered by the court before the party makes its next move.
We just have to look at the judgment and talk to the speaker, and she will do the honorable thing. She cannot defy the highest court in the land.
While Zuma has already survived 8 motions of no confidence, experts warn he is unlikely to survive if an impeachment is brought forward this time around.
That was Tuso Kumalo in Johannesburg.
Now, in Uganda, a group of Rwanda nationals have accused elements in the Ugandan government of persecuting them. This comes after a number of Rwandese were arrested by the army in Kampala and the western district of Mbarara. Relatives of the arrested claim they have been denied access to their loved ones. Police is also holding another 45 Rwandese on terrorism charges. As Alex Jita reports from Kampala, families of the victims have gone to court hoping to get justice.
Claudette Nsimo is the wife of Herbert Munyangajo, who was arrested 2 weeks ago. The Ugandan law requires that a suspect has to be produced in court and charged within 48 hours. But Munyangajo has not been produced in court. This tempted Nsimo to inquire more about the whereabouts of her husband. She discovered that she was not the only Rwandan going through this traumatic experience.
It turned out that his arrest was one of several. I later learned that the day before, other Rwandan citizens were arrested from Mbarara. After several inquiries, I established that the armed men were from operatives of the Directorate of Military Intelligence.
Together with others in the same situation, Nsima sought legal counsel. Gawaya Tegule is their lawyer. He told me about one suspect identified as Fidel Gasinzi, who was brutally tortured, allegedly by the army, and dumped near the Uganda-Rwanda border.
Without his lawyers allowed to access him, without any medical attention offered to him, and throughout the 2 weeks he was tortured beyond what words can say. We requested the military intelligence to allow us access to him. We filed an application in court, habeas corpus, for him to be produced before the court. Military intelligence reacted by getting Mr. Fidel and dumping him at the border.
The families of the detainees are now demanding the immediate release of their relatives. Claudette Nsima is now acting as their spokesperson.
On behalf of the families of the detainees, I call upon the government of Uganda to respect the rights of the detainees and treat them in a humane and respectful way, to grant us family and lawyers and medical personnel access to our people.
The police has denied the recent arrests, but the army spokesperson, Brigadier Richard Karemire, said the army was holding the suspects but declined to mention their crime.
That matter has been raised through our Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and it will be responded to through that established channel.
Human rights lawyer Aaron Kiza says there is growing concern within the Ugandan legal fraternity for growing cases of human rights abuses by state security agencies.
There is an inherited, an illegal and unconstitutional trend of detaining people beyond 48 hours and doing so with impunity. We shall exercise legal avenues to continue challenging that.
There have been growing tensions between Uganda and Rwanda, although the Ugandan authorities have maintained that the relations are cordial.
Alex Jita reporting.
Now, let's take you back to our top story featuring the world's best, Europe's best, and Africa's head of state. We are. And people have still been commenting. Dick Masisika says, Liberia is full of miracles, from a football player to a political player, wishing him all the best of good luck.
And Martin Lungu says, he dribbled his way up clean, hopefully.
Well, hopefully we don't know much of a scandal on him. And Lamine Fofuna says, I approve Mr. George Weah for presidency because with his exposure around Western nations while playing football, changes and developments will sweep through across Liberia. Hopefully that will be the case. We can only wish them the best.
Yes, there are also comments coming in on Boakai congratulating Weah. Peter Masima says, a good man has good wishes to his nation. Congratulations, first Mr. Vice President, for conceding and the elected president for winning the battle.
Certainly, it doesn't come quite often from our continent that leaders like that do concede defeat very easily. And so Evangelist Musonda says, good example, and that's what Africa needs.
And Cholwe Nachibanga says, that's the spirit we need in Africa. He's also in agreement with Evangelist Musonda.
Messages of congratulations continue to come there. Muhammad Iri says, goal. It's a goal for him. Keep those comments coming and we shall read them as and when we can.
This is Africa Link with me, Eunice Onjo.
And me, Jane Ayeka Kumet. Now, if you are mobile, do not worry because you can always catch up on Africa Link a little later on the day. That's only by going to our page, dw.com/Africa. And you'll go down there, you see where it's written Africa Link on air, and you will be able to listen to the program.
Now, still to come, we shall be featuring Jacob Bull of South Sudan's Anna Taban campaign on our blog report slot.
Anna Taban means I am tired. We're tired of war and conflict in our country. I'm tired of corruption. I'm tired of all sort of hostilities.
And of course, we shall be talking some sport with Jacob Bomani from our own Kiswahili department.
But first, it's that time of the year where most people across the world are out in search for firecrackers and fireworks to light up while ushering in the new year. Despite the fun that comes with it, it also comes with injuries and can cause fire in hot, dry and windy regions.
Now, yes, Eunice, you're absolutely right, and that's why the Ghanaian government has placed a ban on firecrackers. Thousands of police personnel have been deployed across the country to provide security during the New Year's Eve celebrations. Maxwell Souk in the northern town of Tamale followed up on that, and his report is now presented by Isaac Mugabe.
The sounds of firecrackers being lit off in anticipation of the new year 2018 in northern Ghana. It is during this period that dealers smuggling the firecrackers and demand is very high. But the booming business of the firecrackers has its dangerous side. It is also this time of the year that the weather gets dry with cold winds in the savannah belt of Ghana. This means that the firecrackers could cause fire outbreaks. And it's the main reason why the government placed a long ban on the product. The excitement is obvious as people openly blast off firecrackers at Sagnarigu, Tamale, northern Ghana. Lisa Adams is a resident there.
We are all happy that we are alive, we are healthy to witness that 2017 is actually coming to an end with us. God has seen us through the year, and I'm actually excited because not everybody who started this year actually ended the year. But here I am. I am happy to see that 2017 has come to an end, and I'm looking forward to a prosperous 2018.
But those blasting the firecrackers are doing it in contravention of the law. Adam Idrisu Banziba, who works as a public relations officer at the Ghana National Fire Service in Tamale, explains why blasting firecrackers can be dangerous.
If a little spark occurs where these knockouts of firecrackers found themselves, there will be an explosion. And if they are in large quantity, it can escalate within a minute and cause a very serious havoc.
The Ghana Police Service in the northern region have deployed its personnel to patrol the neighborhoods as confirmed by the Assistant Superintendent of Police, Yusuf Mohamed Tanko.
We are deploying about 1,300 officers to patrol the metropolis and beyond. This will include foot patrols, mobile patrols, intelligence gathering.
Perez Asamo is one of the dealers. He's aware of the restrictions, but due to the high demand for firecrackers, it will be difficult to regulate.
Mostly we have the medium ones, the small ones. Those ones are just for just these festive occasions, like fire festival, damba, and all that stuff. But like during the Christmas, maybe on the 31st, the churches and other people come by those, the big ones.
A report by Maxwell Souk in Tamale.
Now, we asked our listeners and our viewers on Facebook, what do you think, should fireworks be banned? And Obi Auburn said, ban the nonsense, respect the environment and sound, and the sound you make. People with heart issues can get a heart attack from a sudden explosive sound. We need to respect sound pollution in public.
And Sam Olutu Missin says, ban them in some dangerous areas and light them in others. And I think that's exactly what the Ghanaian government has done, because the ban is not nationwide, but rather in northern Ghana, which is mostly dry. Eunice, do you have a problem with firecrackers?
I actually don't, but I just don't like the way people make misuse them when they light them everywhere and kind of distract people and not give them
their space. Or is it that it distracts your sleep when you want to go to bed?
Well, I'm actually awake at the time because it is New Year's Eve celebration.
And you don't want it to find you sleeping. That's nice.
Blog report. Now, Anna Taban is a campaign by young South Sudanese activists and artists. It was launched in the country's capital, Juba, in September last year, and it promotes peace and denounces the violence that has displaced millions of people due to civil war. The words Anna Taban mean, I am tired.
Our colleague Isaac Mugabe had a chance to talk to Jacob Bull, a co-founder and media coordinator at Anna Taban. And Bull starts by telling us why his campaign came to be.
We came together as a group of creatives. Literally, what I mean by creative is that we had like people who do film directing, people who do acting, people who do visual art, people who do music, people who do spoken word. You know, we came together as youth of South Sudan and think, you know, what can we do in order to contribute in stopping this fight that is going on in our country? And so we came together after the 2016 incident, when the then first vice president had got into a fight with the armed conflict with the president Salva Kiir. So that's when Anna Taban was founded. So Anna Taban means I am tired.
Okay, and, so basically you are tired of war and the conflict in your country, is that right?
Yes, we're tired of war and conflict in our country. I'm tired of corruption. I'm tired of all sort of hostilities and things that we never expected to get into, because most of us, when we gained independence in 2011, we had hopes.
How easy or challenging was it at the beginning when you guys started your movement, Anna Taban?
Well, it was challenging in a way that you're bringing something that has never been in context before, because no one has ever used art, you know, in South Sudan to advocate for peace. It was a new way of advocacy. You know, we have been experiencing armed conflicts, armed movement every now and then, you know, looking at the way like SPLA came into being, fighting for the marginalization and self-determination of the people of South Sudan. And so it was quite challenging. It was not easy for people to understand what exactly can anything to do with art advocacy, art into bringing peace in South Sudan.
And how has your work impacted the ordinary South Sudanese, I mean, your communities and all that?
Before we started in 2016, there were no major youth activities, or not many people were speaking up because people were so scared. People felt like, you know, when you say something, because we have had this major issue of unknown gunmen, whereby you get targeted and you get killed. Sometimes, you know, when you speak up, you might be like either harassed or maybe detained and, or somehow jailed. So what has happened is that I feel like there's a bit of civic space being opened, because there are so many youth groups that now are coming up, and so many women groups and so many other groups that are coming up and speaking up about the issues that are happening in the country. So literally, I would say that this space, it's a little bit widening, and people are able to be bold and courageous enough to speak up about all that is going on. So that's one thing that I would say has doing what we do, or rather Anna Taban, has really impacted the people of South Sudan.
Jacob Bull, co-founder and media coordinator at Anna Taban, speaking to our colleague Isaac Mugabe.
And let's now wind up the show with a review of this year's Sporting World. Our own Jacob Omani from the Kiswahili department is here to do that. Now, Jacob, let's start with a look at Africa's shining stars on the pitch. Who was yours, your best, in your opinion?
I would single out two African players. The first one should be Mohamed Salah. He plays for Liverpool Football Club in England and the Egyptian national team. He's been exceptional this season, I would say, since his move from AS Roma of Italy to Liverpool. He's done pretty well in the English Premier League. He's scored in pretty much every game that Liverpool have played, and he's still doing well. The second player would be Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Borussia Dortmund and Gabon. He hasn't been the player that we saw last season, actually due to a number of factors, but he's done pretty well. He's the second top goal scorer in the Bundesliga with 13 goals, two goals less than the ones Robert Lewandowski of Bayern Munich has scored, but he's doing pretty well.
You just made mention of Bundesliga there, which is certainly on the winter recess, but we've been following it and we see how the different matches have been playing out. Now, I would like to hear from you. What can we expect when it resumes?
There's a lot to expect when the Bundesliga resumes from the winter recess. Bayern Munich is right on top and far ahead of the second team in the Bundesliga. It has 41 points out of 17 matches it's played. Schalke comes second with 30 points, but expect a fight for the Champions League spots and Europa League spots because, like I said, Schalke is in second spot with 30 points. Then comes Borussia Dortmund with 28. Bayer Leverkusen has 7 points. RB Leipzig and Borussia Mönchengladbach also have 28 points. So all those teams will be fighting for the Champions League spots. And remember, there's also the Europa League spots. There is TSG Hoffenheim with 26 points and Eintracht Frankfurt with also 26 points. It's going to be a battle. There's still a lot to play for.
Yes, it's going to be a battle, certainly. And you just made mention of Bayern Munich being safe there. I mean, in as far as getting to the Champions League is concerned. But it's also top on the table of the Bundesliga. Can we say it's already safe there, or can we expect some variations to come?
I can say they're pretty safe, being 11 points clear. They are pretty safe because they've invested so much in the team. They signed players, high-quality players like James Rodriguez, and they just recently signed Sandro Wagner, striker from TSG Hoffenheim. So they have invested. They are still investing, and no team is investing as much as Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. It's just amazing.
It's amazing, yeah. Now, talk about movements here and there. That was about players, but 2007 has been full of movement on the side of trainers. I mean, the coaches as well, right from FC Bayern getting back their old man there. And we also have a change of coach from Borussia Dortmund, as well as several others there. Do we foresee stabilization in this line?
I think stabilization in the movement of coaches will depend on the results. But I think the management of every team will be looking at how their coaches are going to fare. And maybe we're going to see movement towards the end of the season, or when the season ends. That's when they're going to sit down and analyze how the coaches have fared.
Jacob Bomani, thanks for that sports update to wind up this edition of Africa Link this year.
Now, this week, we also asked you, our dear listeners, who your heroes are. In fact, that's our topic of the week, which is part of our new project, the 77%, a multimedia project that focuses on all those people who are under 35 in Africa. You should actually make a point of checking this out on Facebook. Just visit DW Africa.
77%. That's the new project. And if you're under 35, there's no reason as to why you should not be taking part in this project. And to that effect, our own Edith Kimani said her heroine is Wangari Maathai, the Kenyan Nobel Peace Prize winner and environmentalist who is best known for her tree planting movement.
And we got some responses. Caroline Swahili says Wangari Maathai believed in a cause and wouldn't let any form of intimidation derail her vision. Her books are enchanting and encouraging to all African girls and women. My biggest hero is my mom. She made sure everyone was clothed and fed and went to school. She did not care if you liked school or not.
And Zakaria Nyei says, my hero is the late Nelson Mandela.
Nduga Joseph says, my girlfriend. She has been there for me in every way that she could. She got pregnant for me last year, but when I broke the news to my family members, they did not welcome it. But my girlfriend has never given up on me, and now she is a great mother to my child.
Isn't that an interesting?
It
I like such an inspiring partner. At least he gives the lady courage. And Ben Porter says, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah is my hero.
Well, do let us know who your hero is and visit our Facebook page on the 77% Project.
It's been a pleasure having you all on board in 2017. We do thank you very much for being on board. From Ejen Ayeka Kumet and the rest of Africa Link, people who have been, some voices that you've been familiar with, Crispin, ZP, the people behind there, we do thank you and hope to join you sometime next year.
Yes, and I'm Eunice Onjuro and would like to ask you to join us again on Monday for our New Year's special edition.
From us all, it's a happy new year.
And guten Rutsch, as the Germans say, slide well into the new year. Bye for now.